We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Welcome to the end of the weekend.
Please don't let today be Monday. Please don't let today be Monday. Please, 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 please don't let today be Monday.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
And then what followed was bad, even by Monday standards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Royals are on a winning streak. The Suns are 5-0 in the bubble. What else could you possibly ask for? Everyone has those same rooting interests, right? That's not just me. It's probably just me. Welcome into Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe with you for the next 3 hours as we look back a little bit at the Royals at this point. In the hunt? Question mark? In the hunt? Kansas City Royals? Sure, why not? As they have now won three in a row, they win in a blowout over the Cubs. They finally win a one-run game against the Twins last night. Danny Duffy slips up. The Royals' offense covers form right away, and they get the 9-6 win. It's nice from the Twins' perspective, and really nice from the Royals' perspective. As there's some stuff to be excited about there and some stuff to talk about there. So we'll do some of that today. Also, we really have a legit packed 3 hours because we will be starting off with a little bit of Royals stuff. But in 15, 20 minutes or so, I'm going to bring you a conversation that I had on Friday that I really think everybody would enjoy and everyone should hear. I talked to Greg Bishop of Sports Illustrated on Friday about his Tyrann Mathieu story. And the story is great, and the if you've read the story, you're going to get an enhanced version of it talking to Greg. Several things that didn't make the cut, and what he learned about Tyrann Mathieu, some stuff. There's some stuff about Tyrann Mathieu on Brett Veach that wasn't in the story that you'll only hear as Greg and I talk. As we talked on Friday, we'll bring it around here in about 20 minutes or so. And we're bringing you that earlier than usual because starting at around 10:30, we're hearing from the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Sammy Watkins, L'Jarius Sneed currently on the list as well. I don't think we've heard from him since the draft. They had some of the rookies towards the beginning of the training camp reporting period, but that's the quartet of Chiefs presses we're expecting today. Andy Reid, Pat Mahomes, Sammy Watkins, L'Jarius Sneed, and we'll be around 10:30 or so. We will hear from them, and then we'll bring you that live. Talk about that a little bit, and then we'll be joined by Darren Smith to close out the show to lead into the ship, which will be on after us here today on 810. So a packed show, and and also, maybe we just continually break into the Formula One race. It's always on my screen. It feels like at 9 a.m. on a Sunday. I don't know why. It just seems like it's always there. This is not just a very high graphic video game, right? Honestly, it can be difficult to tell. It appears to be real, though. Probably won't spend a lot of time on that, but we should talk about the Royals winning last night. Like I said, Duffy was looking really good, and then the bottom just sort of fell out, and it snowballed. He was good through three, and then the fourth inning, he gave up four runs. But the Royals were up 2-0 entering that inning, and then got six more in the bottom of the fourth. So it would have been nice for Duffy to get. I mean, Matheny even mentioned this in the post game. We'll try to bring you his audio later today too. But Matheny mentioned this in the post game that it would have been great for Duffy to at least get him through the fifth, or at least get back out there and through the fifth would have been excellent, and especially for a bullpen that's still, even as they've gotten actual starting pitchers loaded up and going through the rotation right now, there's still such a weight put on this bullpen, but it's been excellent. Last night, they end up giving up a run in the sixth and the seventh, and the Royals tacked on an extra in the bottom. of the seventh inning. But Zuber comes out for an inning and a third. He gives up a run. Greg Holland finishes out the inning, walks a guy, gives up a hit, but ends up getting through it. Ian Kennedy comes out early, as has been Mike Matheny's want to do. Gabe Spire comes out, and everything is fine. Trevor Rosenthal closes it out over the course of a four-out save. There he strikes out three, and the Royals win 9-6. The thing that I was talking to somebody who also talks about / covers the Royals. And we're talking about how it feels like this team could really use a few more genuinely interesting storylines. And I thought that made sense, but I agree. There's a lot of, like, there are some dudes that are just sort of dudes. And even the guys like Danny Duffy, this is a very Danny Duffy start. You'd like to see him last a little bit longer, but, you know, Nicky Lopez might be a story from last night, but is he going to be a story over the course of the season? Small story, if not a big one, whatever. But the one thing that I think, as I was having this conversation, the one thing that I think is a season-long interesting story is one that I think we're already becoming a little bit numb to, which is that Mike Matheny is so not just willing, it is his strategy, his purposeful intent to say, I really don't care what inning it is. I know who from my bullpen is going to give me the best outing right now. And I know how to try to preserve future matchups for later on. But it's always first point and then second point as a considerable later second. It's not devil may care about the innings down the road, but it's let us get through what we have right now, and then I will make that further calculation whenever we get there. And right now, the Royals' bullpen is legitimately deep enough and strong enough at this point that they can afford to do that. Matheny can say, oh, he hasn't said it like this verbatim, but he can say essentially, let's handle this sixth inning, and if we get to the ninth, and it's still close, and we're still nervous, we'll figure it out. We'll have a guy out there who we can rely on in a moment like this. I will also break the news to everyone, including myself. We will not be hearing from Mike Matheny today because whenever I emailed the audio to Beards last night, I did not attach the audio. I did record it and edit and reformat it.
That's all very good.
And edit it.
I just don't have it.
And I sent you an email with 8820 Royals post in the subject line. And then the body of the email says, all one file, order Matheny, Soler, Rosenthal, Lopez. Beards will use Matheny tomorrow for sure. Maybe Lopez, maybe Rosenthal.
Todd Lebo was on this email.
Lebo's also on this email. He has not noticed, it seems. I sent that email, and what I didn't send was arguably one of the more important parts, which was the actual audio itself.
I mean, that's debatable. It was the thought that counted.
The reason that I was like sure we would play Matheny today is he sounded legitimately like happy in the postgame press conference. So I might just have to do like an impression of it at some point, or you can take my word for it. It might have been a little bit relief, but it's not like, you know, they just won an important game that was going to cost him his job or whatever. Like, I think he was just really happy that they've won three in a row, two of those on really good offensive performances. And it just sort of felt like things were going well. You have two absolutely crushed baseballs from Jorge Soler. Almost had a third. But two home runs for Soler. You get a home run from Nicky Lopez, who Joel Goldberg had a great anecdote that he was telling right before Nicky Lopez hit his first homer of the season. He was talking to him, and Nicky said that I think this can be overstated in some instances or whatever, but I thought it was well discussed between Nicky and Joel Goldberg. He said he felt like he was sort of relearning how to be himself this year. And again, that might sound a little kooky, but the logic of it was that he is a loud, sort of outspoken person who's comfortable in a leadership role. And being an energy giver like that. And baseball teams need that, especially in normal seasons, man. It's a long-ass season. Like, you need dudes that are able to inject some energy into the lineup, into the clubhouse, wherever. It's a grind. And he's saying that he's comfortable in that type of role in setting the tone and trying to be a leader. And, you know, even though he's young and batted eighth last night, that's a role that he's comfortable in. And last year he was saying that he was just very much kind of quiet, sit in the back and try to learn the feel of everything, which I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with. It makes a lot of sense that your first year in the big leagues, you don't immediately step in and try to tell Alex Gordon how to set a tone. But whenever you are a vocal natural leader that's your most comfortable place, even if your play doesn't sort of justify that volume, but that is who you are and it's all constructive and that's what might actually help you balance back out your play because that's what you feel like you should be doing in your role, then you absolutely should be operating in that headspace. You should be who you are in that sense. I just thought that was really interesting. And so it sounds like he's kind of stepping more into that. And as that story had basically just concluded, he had a home run. I think it was his third career because he was saying after the game that we could have played his audio right here. We could have played a little Nicky Lopez talking about these guys giving him a hard time, but I listened to the presser and I can't play it for you because I didn't send the actual audio to Beards. But I will tell you. I mean, at least I was on the call. You know, I didn't see on that call anybody else from 810. So I tried. Like Beard said, it's the thought that counts. Lebo can't give me bleep. He wasn't on the call. And you can't be like, hey, he wasn't on the call because he knew you were going to be. I asked him if he wanted me to be. He's like, I'm not going to be on it. Yeah, I said, no worries, Lebo. I got it.
Why'd you throw Lebo under the bus like that?
And by the time, well, no, it's okay. We had an agreement. I got him covered. Look, man, It's like after the game, hey Lebo, the second baseman, could you have backpedaled and caught that pop-up? No, I couldn't have, but didn't need to. My center fielder was charging in. Right before the ball hit him in the face? Yeah, but he was there! He was in position. He didn't get his glove up, but he was in position. I didn't see you on the Zoom call, Beards. I'm not just throwing Lebo, I'm not throwing Lebo under the bus.
I don't get those links.
I'm saying I checked with Lebo. He's like, yep, nope, that's all you. Cool, I got it. Ball, 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 ball. Thunk. Right into my forehead. That would hurt. Sort of a David and Goliath thing, but with a baseball, and I'm not a giant. I'm a giant something, if you ask people. Beards is not. No, not so hard, Beards. Anyway. Because remember Nicky Lopez saying last night that the guys were giving him a hard time, that his, I can't remember where his two other homers came. I think he said one was in, one of them must have been whenever they played in Omaha. Because he said one was in Nebraska, and I literally did not put that together until just now. Like, he had a major league home run in Nebraska? What was that about? It must have been whenever they played that series. I don't remember who they played, but they played that series in Omaha last year. It must have been one of those. I think maybe Camden, he might have said. Anyway, it's not important, but I just thought that was a good, fun, interesting story about Nicky Lopez. And also, I don't know, I might not be stretching for one more storyline from that, but whenever we had so many horror stories out of St. Louis about Mike Matheny and young players, the kind of thing, there's the literal, like, development sense of, like, are you letting the young guys play? But when, you know, if a guy like Nicky Lopez, who is, you know, batting eighth or ninth most of the time, if he can feel like he can be a vocal leader and that's not being squashed by the manager, that's a great thing. You got to take those, like I said, those injections of energy where you can get them. And he's been playing pretty well. His average is still 250 right now, but there've been some nice moments from Nicky Lopez, which is really encouraging. I don't know if this will ultimately be the case, but I hope at the end of this season, there's at least the thought that Nicky Lopez is a, you know, that he could be a major league starter, even if that means he's hitting in the eight hole. You could probably argue that if you're major, like the eight hole should be EIGHT. The eight spot should be reserved for somebody who is like kind of teetering there. But we'll see if Nicky Lopez can sort of climb above that. But I know this is going to sound ridiculous. The Royals have won three in a row. They, in theory, have a game starting at 1 this afternoon. It's currently raining, but I feel like it's supposed to stop pretty soon. I'm over summer, by the way. The rain is a nice, like, pretending that it's not actually summer still, but it's just hot and humid now, and I hate it. I'm ready for fall back. Like, it's raining right now, but it's supposed to be 90 degrees at 1 o'clock. I don't want that. I don't want it to rain and then become 90 degrees. That's a nightmare. We're just standing outside boiling. Needless to say, I will not actually be outside. That was sort of a fiction created for someone who might go outside today, which is not me, except for to get to my car. And then from my car back inside the house. Anyway. This sounds kind of wild, but the Royals are two games back of Chicago right now. 2.5. 3 games back of Cleveland. Detroit has only played 12 games to the Royals' 16. So they're 7-5, but the Royals are 6-10. So what will they actually, how those balance out, we'll see. I'm gonna build you a happy little future land, okay? If the Royal starters pitch well, everybody's healthy and back, they have an actual rotation again. If that holds and maybe even develops a little bit, the bullpen's looked really good. The lineup has been very streaky, to be kind. They did lose 6 in a row before winning 3 in a row. But if the offense can have a little bit of pop, and if Jorge Soler can hit 2 homers every night, and if Nicky Lopez can hit 1 every night, if those things all happen, the Royals might be a little interesting, at least a little fun. They got really unfun when they were playing the Chicago teams. That Chicago stretch was not fun. 13-2 was fun, but it was after a 6-game losing streak, so still. Losing 8 out of 9, I believe it was, and then 6 in a row. not fun. Last few nights, been a good time. And I hope, I at the very least hope that continues. We will take a break here on Sports Sunday. Whenever we come back, my conversation with Greg Bishop of SI.com. He wrote an excellent story about Tyrann Mathieu. We'll play him back for whenever we come back.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
You know they're probably not going to talk about on ESPN? On ESPN Radio that gets potted up here in a little bit? Too many Spider Boys.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Still Sports Sunday, still Sports Radio 810, still Joshua Briscoe with you here. We will hear from the Kansas City Chiefs in about an hour. Press conferences live from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Sammy Watkins, L'Jarius Sneed, all set to be on the Zoom conference call. We'll carry it for you live here on your home for the NFL in Kansas City, Sports Radio 810. But before we hear from the Chiefs, I want to talk about the Chiefs a little bit. In fact, it's a conversation we had on Friday night that I want to make sure everyone has a chance to listen to. It's with Greg Bishop of SI.com. He wrote a story about Tyrann Mathieu on Friday that it kind of digs into not just the origin point of Tyrann Mathieu, which we know a little bit about, right? Getting kicked off LSU and having like a dozen positive drug tests and some of the stuff in his childhood. We talked about that a little bit with Greg. But what it really does is it really focuses on the connection point of then and the connection point of the AFC championship game with confetti falling down, and then the Super Bowl with confetti falling down. Even those are noted as being distinctly different. But it kind of uses those as the end points, although it actually goes through this offseason with Tyrann Mathieu and some of his activism and everything. But it's about the end points less than it's about the connection of the two and drawing that point A to point B line and what Tyrann Mathieu ultimately evolves into and that process of his evolution. It's really fascinating. It's a great read up on SI.com. And we talked to Greg about that, and I asked him to start. I learned a lot in that story, even knowing a little bit about Tyrann Mathieu. I asked him what he learned and thought was most interesting from his conversations with Mathieu.
Well, thank you for having me, Joshua. I appreciate it. And, you know, to me, the biggest thing that stood out about him, and we talked a couple times during the pandemic, I was never able to quite get out and see him. But, you know, I knew he was interesting. I knew he was a different sort of dude. And I figured that he would have a lot of opinions on a lot of things that are going on, not only with the team, but with the world. And what stood out to me was just, you know, how interesting the conversations were. They didn't feel as much like interviews as some of these tend to. Yeah. He didn't seem to be in a rush. And it was just one thing after another that I thought was, you know, compelling and different. And he's just a very unique guy. I hope that came across in the piece. There aren't a lot of guys like him.
Yeah, I think it did. But I also would have probably described him as being thoughtful, I guess, just in the time that we've had, even, you know, in more group settings and as we all try to, you know, get a few questions here or there in a press conference and even some longer form conversations. But throughout this and in the written form, you know, just to tell you how great you are for a few minutes before we actually dive into some of it, the way the story is laid out does such a good job, I think, of snapping in at this moment of the Chiefs and through their playoff run, and there's kind of even a line drawn between the Super Bowl and going back to the AFC Championship game and even the differences in those moments. But whenever you kind of jump around the way that you do through the story, it kind of provides the context that I think, like I said at the beginning, I think we've kind of been lacking on Mathieu some. I imagine that a good number of people here in Kansas City know what his earlier life looked like, some of the issues he had at LSU and everything. But as you kind of started learning in more depth what that was like, what did you learn about the foundation that kind of ended up setting for Tyrann Mathieu to be who he is now?
Yeah, I'm really glad you hit on that because, you know, I do our Super Bowl cover every year. Last year I did it with Jenny Vrentis. You know, we wrote about the Chiefs and their comeback and the victory, and it just seemed like when I watched him at the Super Bowl that he seemed like he was in a very good headspace. You know, he talked a lot about meditation. He talked a lot about finding balance and peace. And these aren't things I think we necessarily associate with Mr. Mathieu. And so to me, it was interesting to kind of explore that. I feel like early part of his life has been pretty well explored. You know, the friends that were killed when he was growing up, you know, the way that he had to go live with other relatives, you know, what happened with his parents. And I just felt like, how did he get from one place to the other? And so I kind of put that in my back pocket in terms of what I might want to write this off season. And, you know, when the opportunity came up to talk to him, I kind of pitched him on something more in depth. And I said, I don't think there's a right answer to this necessarily, but I'm just very curious how you got to this place where I see you in this video that Michael Thomas put together for the NFL. It was super important, and I think, you know, it really forced a reaction out of the league. Where I see you in the Super Bowl, you know, yelling at guys in the fourth quarter as that team started to come back. And how do we get from the kid who got dismissed at LSU to there? And, you know, I didn't really have any expectations as to what he might say or how he might frame what happened. And, you know, then when he offers up the mindfulness coach and the yogi and the holistic doctor, I just said, you know, there's a lot going on here. What really struck me about all of it together is just that, you know, here's a guy who lived through pretty much anything a person can live through. And what he decided to do was take control of his own life, you know, and that was, you know, by finding balance, by looking at his issues, by dealing with them, by confronting the things that got him kicked out of school. And I just think, you know, there's a lesson to be learned for all of us there. Not all stories necessarily come with that, but it was kind of interesting to watch that this is not an accident. It didn't happen, you know, by luck. It was because he decided he wanted to be different, to live different, and he really took control and did it.
And for the people that haven't read the story yet, or and also for some of the stuff that I love talking to people about the stuff that didn't make the cut, because some of it I find you just think, oh, I don't really know where this would have gone, but man, it was interesting at the time. But you mentioned here you call the three people that he has kind of guiding him through that transition that you mentioned, his three wise men, the pastor, the naturopath, and the yogi. And at that point, I was just so excited to keep reading the piece because it sets up almost, I mean, it sets up like a pastor, a naturopath, and a yogi walk into a bar and they help Tyrann Mathieu find Zen. Can you walk us through a little bit of what that conversation with Tyrann Mathieu was like as he kind of brought you those people and that process?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I wish I had that line before I wrote. I probably would have stolen it. But it was interesting how it came up in conversation because, you know, we were talking about yoga and mindfulness and balance, and he said something about a yoga coach. And I was like, what? You know, mm-hmm. like the record kind of skipped. And I asked him, what did he mean by that? And then it was just really interesting that, like, here's a guy who fell in the draft, you know, a guy who was successful in Arizona but battled a ton of injuries, who went to Houston, became an instant leader, a guy that they absolutely loved. Battled more injuries, you know, let go by a couple places in terms of they didn't want to pay top dollar for a safety. And he ends up in Kansas City where everybody knows he can play, but nobody knew he'd have, you know, just that kind of impact. And I think there was this period in his life, you know, when he's going to Houston after being replaced in Arizona, when he's dealt with, you know, injury after injury after injury in his career, which comes on top of everything that happened at LSU, when I just think he was searching for something. You know, there was the pastor that he ended up hooking up with, the spiritual advisor, like they had a random Twitter exchange, but he was looking so in-depth at his own life that he felt like, you know, this guy and him could connect. You know, he knew he wanted to sort of calm the chaos in his mind, and so he decided he was going to look for techniques to do that. And then he knew that he'd been injured a lot. You know, like this is something he couldn't ignore, as he's noted several times to me, that, you know, he's missed 16 games in his career. And he decided he wanted to try some different things to see if he could stay healthy. And, you know, again, I don't think any of that was accidental. But what was interesting is that, you know, he didn't, you know, like post a bulletin for any of this stuff. He came to all of it naturally, some of it by serendipity. And ultimately, these guys ended up gaining his trust. And my favorite thing today was the spiritual advisor, a guy, Scott Savage. He sent me a picture, and it was a picture of three wise men, and it had each of their names over one of them, and he said he sent it to Tyrann today.
That's fantastic. Obviously, again, you know, the early life stuff in the college and all of that, we know who he is now. But did he have an example of a sort of a transitional feeling, either in the process or at one point where there's kind of that moment of like, I'm in a better place now because of the work I've put in, because of the help of these three guys?
Yeah, I think Houston was really where it started to show. You know, that was a place where I think my understanding from the people I talked to in that organization is that they would have loved to have kept him. You know, it's just like you saw them trade the other Hopkins. You know, you saw what they had to pay their left tackle. You know what they're going to have to pay Deshaun Watson. And I just think that was more of a, you know, they're not in a great cap situation, and they had to let go of one of the best receivers in pro football for basically peanuts in return and David Johnson. And I just think that, you know, there was, when he went there, there were some questions as to whether he could stay healthy. There were some questions as to whether he would be a positive impact in the locker room. And he was saying, you know, I don't think this made the story, but within a few weeks, they were telling him to talk to the team. I mean, Bill O'Brien wanted him to be captain, and he just knew that this guy was a guy that could take them and that defense, you know, to the next sort of level. And, you know, they had a successful season. They couldn't come to terms in terms of keeping him around. But Bill O'Brien took what I think was an unusual step and told Steve Spagnuolo, you know, this guy will change the culture of your locker room instantly. And what do we know about the Chiefs? Amazing offense, MVP quarterback, and a defense that really needed to kind of make it so that they could still win, you know, with those things in place. And I think when you look back now, that conversation seems fortuitous because, you know, it's essentially what happened. Like, there was a huge imprint of him on the culture of the team that extended far beyond what he could do on the field. And what he could do on the field is pretty special anyway. And when you start to line those dots up and you had Frank Clark and Chris Jones and all of these things, then you see the defense that we saw at the end of last season, you know, which is, to me, what really tipped the Super Bowl in their favor eventually. And I think that that's, you know, something that'll be interesting to watch in the year upcoming because, you know, if the defense can play like that consistently, and there's no reason to think they can't, and you have Patrick Mahomes,
yeah,
and you have Andy Reid, I mean, there's no reason to think those guys won't be right back where they were again.
Yeah, we have fun here with all of that being said. it's funny the thing about Bill O'Brien in a couple of weeks wanting him to talk to the team and be a captain and all of that, because I couldn't give you the time that it happened, but pretty early last year, we started noticing that on for media availabilities on days whenever coordinators would speak, they would start the Chiefs like PR group would be like, all right, here's Eric Bieniemy, Steve Spagnuolo, special teams coach Dave Tobe, and Tyron Matthew. He started speaking to the media with the coordinators, and he had that kind of trust and platform from the organization. Did you find in that conversation with him? Because, I mean, you know, you note that, like, he was never a distraction on the field at LSU or never late and stuff like that. But does the leadership come naturally? Is that something that you feel like he had to work on, that changed as he changed? That particular trait of a guy who can come in and change the culture, like, where does that come from?
You know, I think a guy like him where, like, the leadership style is sort of innate. Like, it's inside of him. Like, guys will follow him because they like what he's about and how he acts. I think that part of it is sort of natural. I think what you've seen from him in the last couple of years, particularly in Houston and with Kansas City last year, is that he's become more vocal about it. You know, he's definitely more involved. And I think nothing in the story really highlighted that more than, you know, what happened when all the demonstrations kicked off. You know, Clark Hunt called Tyron Matthew and wanted to know about social justice and about the issues to consider. And he didn't just say Black Lives Matter. He didn't just say this is a systematic problem. He talked to him about voter registration, you know, which is a real issue in our country and a real thing that can be fixed and fixed quickly with a guy like Tyron Matthew and other, you know, famous athletes behind it. And so that to me spoke to, one, the sort of weight he carries in that organization. You know, two, it spoke to, like, the kind of change that's possible with conversations just like that one. And three, it really said to me that he knows what he's talking about, that it's not just a guy that, you know, it'd be great if he just went to a protest, you know, and just showed up and just supported. And, you know, I love the picture of him that's in the magazine when it comes out of, you know, with his fist raised, you know, and I think that it echoes so much of what happened in the 1960s. And I thought it was really powerful, but, you know, I think there's a real substance behind that. This is a guy that understands what needs to be fixed, who has ideas on how to do it. And who's like, you know, the owner of an NFL football team, one of the most storied franchises in the NFL, is asking him, you know, what he thinks he can do. And that, to me, said a lot about how far he's come.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also, you even more specifically, you mentioned in the story, Hunt, Veach, and Reid organized Zoom calls for the entire team, and no one mentioned football. Instead, black players detailed their life experiences to white executives, and for weeks this went on even in position meetings. Can you expand on any more of the details you got there and what Tyron sort of let you in on in terms of how those meetings went, how long they went on, and how much they felt they accomplished in those?
Yeah, the thing that stood out to me is just the depth that was involved there. You know, I would imagine a lot of teams took a couple of days to do this and then sort of went back to football. Like, he was saying that his sense is that these guys really wanted to learn from them. And not just him. You know, you're talking about, he mentioned Patrick Mahomes. He mentioned other guys on the team. And he was saying that he got the vibe from everyone in the organization, particularly the executives who are pretty high up, that, you know, that they wanted to understand the issues at play here and that they weren't just going to move on and sort of say that they'd addressed it and not really, like, look deeply into what's going on. And, you know, I think that kind of thing can help when the season starts, when there's so much uncertainty. I mean, I think what we're looking at this year is, like, how much trust is there going to be between the guys that had to step out into these conditions and play, and, like, the people that want them to play, you know, essentially because they all need to make money. And I think that, you know, those sort of bonding that you can do to really try to understand another person, to see what they lived through and how it impacted them and how it made them the people that they are, I think those are important conversations that are happening all over America right now. But I think they're particularly profound when it's the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs and the star safety and the face of the NFL. I mean, to me, that's exactly where you're starting to look at how can we change things and how can people like Tyron be a part of it.
Yeah. I guess this could be answered either very narrowly or very broadly, and so I guess I'll let you kind of decide what you feel like you know more about. But whenever you talk about the activism, both in kind of the recent surge in Black Lives Matter and then them talking about setting up voter registration and all of that, what do you get the feel that he wants to accomplish through that? You know, ideally more so than, you know, get more people registered to vote. But, like, what's the driving force and the end goal in what he's looking to accomplish?
Yeah, I think he's still sorting through a lot of that, but he's really started to kind of dive in. A big thing for him that we talked a lot about was talking to people about these issues that don't understand them. And that could be people in the organization. You know, he didn't say specifically that any certain person had no knowledge, but you saw things like what Vic Fangio said, that there's no racism in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, you saw the response from his team. I think, you know, educating people that didn't have your experience to what it's like puts a lot more people on the same side. But then you've seen him do other things. He partnered with a group in Baton Rouge to help at-risk youth. The idea is to give them speakers who will teach them empowerment and show them that there's a different sort of way forward. You know, he didn't do that through his own foundation because he liked the work that this group was already doing.
Hmm.
You know, it's just a lot of stuff like that. There was the typical stuff like the COVID donations, but I think it's also, you know, he was saying that a lot of the Chiefs have talked specifically about voter registration and how they can use their platform to encourage that in Kansas City. We're seeing that may be a big issue right now with the elections coming up and, you know, all the sort of criticism over the mail-in ballots. And so, you know, I think for him, it's you know, educate yourself, educate those around you, make people aware of the issues and what's at hand. And then what we've seen, I think, from him is how he's chosen things that sort of fall under what he believes in and really started to attack them. But I think we're really also pretty early into that process, and I would imagine that he's got a lot more plans than even what we talked about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we had him in a Zoom press conference again, you know, a few weeks ago, and more recently also. But a few weeks ago, we talked about kind of the beginning of the voter registration stuff, and he talked about, like you mentioned, Colin Kaepernick in the story and kind of how he feels that he got blackballed. He talked about Kaepernick then a little bit and why he didn't do more at the time. And it really felt like this is a guy that's been in that process of trying to figure out his voice. So I think it makes a lot of sense that this is, you would say this is kind of a midpoint in his evolution of using his voice. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a good point on Kaepernick. Like, if we're talking about this sort of awakening right around that time period, I have to imagine that it factored in. You know, I think we talked about it a little bit, but you have this idea of seeing this player stand up for these things and not doing as much in hindsight maybe as you think you could have. And then you have another opportunity 4 years later after the three wise men, after the growth, after you won a title, to really go back and do what it is that you want to do. And I think what you saw is, you know, him take some more steps toward, you know, really being out front, really being open about how he feels. And I think that, yeah, you're right. I think that there's a lot of time left to do more.
I could talk about Tyrann Mathieu and read about Tyrann Mathieu all day long, and that specific part of it I think is fascinating. But there are also a couple of things that are kind of team-specific that I was really interested in. You mentioned briefly, but excitingly for me, the relationship with Steve Spagnuolo. And I'm just you mentioned that it you know they have a great relationship and they love working with each other, and Spags told Mathieu at the beginning, like, you're the guy I've wanted to coach, and even the idea that, like, hey, we're not gonna yank you around a bunch of different spots, but then Kendall Fuller gets hurt and Mathieu does end up playing all over the place. But what did he tell you about his relationship with Steve Spagnuolo that may not have made the story?
Yeah, that part really stood out to me. I don't think there's a better introduction you can have as a pro football safety than to have, you know, an acclaimed defensive coordinator who's won Super Bowls compare you to Brian Dawkins.
Yeah. Like,
when you start up a relationship that way, I think the expectations are about as high as they could be. You know, one thing that I thought was interesting is, you know, we have this idea of Tyrann as sort of this versatile player who can move all over the field. And he likes doing that, but he actually was very intrigued by Spags' initial pitch, which was to use him in almost exclusively a free safety role, to not move him around, to let him really concentrate on one thing and do that one thing better than anybody in pro football. And they ended up not being able to carry that through because of injuries, and they ended up switching right around when the season changed to moving him all over the field. And so I think that indicates a lot of trust between the two guys. You know, not only did Spags sell him on a vision that he loved, but he changed that vision, and Mathieu was totally cool with it. And not only was he cool with it, but he led this defensive renaissance that ultimately led to a Super Bowl title. And I think, you know, one thing he talked about was how much film they watched together. It just sounded like they were kindred spirits in a sense.
Yeah.
That they spent a lot of time talking football, and that, you know, from as much as he got from his mindfulness instructor in terms of balance, I think he got, like, the part of football he really loved. Like, his high school coach told me that he loved watching film, even when he was going through everything as a kid, even when he didn't know what his future held. He was a very diligent, you know, film study guy. And I think, you know, what's cool about how everything came together for him is you can see that all these people have sort of their different roles and that he accepted all of their help. And I think with Spags, it was pure football, pure love for the game, pure love for a scheme. And I think you saw that as the season unfolded and the defense changed and ultimately, you know, played a huge role in the Super Bowl victory.
I think that makes a ton of sense, even though it kind of on the face it might not, because that's something that's always fascinated me, is it seems like those two dudes are on the same page on so many things. I never would have used the phrase kindred spirits to describe the two of them, but I love listening to both of them talk. They're both very different, but it does seem like they have their Venn diagram maybe has more overlapping than I've given them credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. And just imagine, you know, a few years ago, 5-6 years ago, whatever, you know, like Spags,
yeah,
was a Super Bowl winning coach and Tyrann Mathieu had been kicked at LSU.
Yeah.
And here we are now, all these years later, and, you know, of course, Patrick Mahomes played a massive role in bringing the Super Bowl to Kansas City. Of course, sure, he's worth the tremendous amount of money they're about to pay him. But, you know, things like signing Tyrann Mathieu and having him fit in that way and having that relationship with Spags, like, that to me, those are the important dots that turn a team that would have probably made the playoffs with no defense into a team that won the Super Bowl. And they're not unimportant, you know, they're very important. And, you know, things like that are why one of the reasons I love covering the NFL. You would never put that pair together, and yeah, you'd never expect what happened to have happened.
A couple more quick things before we let you go here. You talk about the text exchange that happened as Patrick Mahomes was signing his deal and everything, but there is one sentence here that that we could have maybe been our whole conversation, saying earlier this summer, Mathieu pestered Veach, telling him to keep the Chiefs intact. What did you hear from, what did Mathieu tell you that had you boil it down to that sentence of what was Tyrann Mathieu and Brett Veach's text thread like over this offseason as Mathieu is giving Veach, who at this point we're all just sort of declaring a cap wizard, how he should be managing the roster?
Well, what was cool is I got to talk to Tyrann as all this was unfolding. Mm-hmm. You know, so the first time we spoke, he was really heavy on, like, we got to get Chris Jones. This has to get locked in. I really hope that whatever they do with Patrick, you know, allows for, you know, the signing of this guy, because you put him and Clark and Tyrann together, and, you know, it's pretty decent middle of the defense all the way back, you know, regardless of what happens elsewhere, you know. But then I think The other idea was to have some flexibility so that people in the future, like Tyrann Mathieu, you know, will have the ability to sign a long-term kind of deal to keep sort of their core intact. And so he was very hardened by not only the fact that Patrick signed and the length of the deal, but by the fact that it builds in flexibility for the team.
Yeah.
That was something he talked a lot about. And, you know, he may ultimately be the guy that they can't pay. Like, that's definitely a possibility, you know, mm-hmm. because they have a lot of good players, and you just see this all the time. And safety, you know, is sort of like a running back-ish of the defense, and that, like, yeah. teams handle it differently. Some will pay yeah. a lot, some won't. You know, he I think, would want to be paid as much for his leadership as for his skill as his safety. But the other thing that he told me that did make the story is he's like, Brett Veach is going to be a hero. Like, that dude might have a statue, is what he said, you know, based on what's happening right now in Kansas City and his role in, like, putting it all together. I mean, you know as well as anybody, this is a franchise that's been through a lot.
Yeah.
That's been close a lot.
Yeah.
And it just feels like we're at the dawn of an era that we're going to be talking about 10 years from now.
That's awesome. And, yeah, I think you might be right on that prediction also. You also have him texting with Mahomes as the deal gets signed, Reed and Veach as the deal gets signed, but you say that Reed told him that if he has him and Mahomes that he thinks he can coach until he's 90. That filled my heart with joy. What did you get from that, from Mathieu, and then kind of anything about his relationship with Andy Reed?
Well, my favorite part, I didn't use this, because we were just running out of space. But he said, after he said that Reed sent him, he goes, that's my goal now. I want Andy for 20 years, you know, whatever, 25 years. So I liked it, yeah. I thought that was really cool. But to me, it spoke to, I think, like, some of this is like chicken and egg, right? Like, this team is coming off the Super Bowl. Everybody's happy. And, you know, I do think that that's sort of bolstered spirits. You know, this is a group that's proven they have a formula that can work, that can take them deep. And they just seem to be getting better in terms of who they've added and how they look for the upcoming season. And so I think it speaks to, like, Andy Reid having a youthful exuberance about him and Tyrann wanting to draw that out of him, because that's kind of what Tyrann does. And I think that when you look at it, I do think you're looking at a decent window here. Like, you know, if they can keep the core together, if Patrick Mahomes can stay healthy, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see Reid coach for, you know, however long he wants in terms of, well, you won the NFL every year as a chance to win a Super Bowl, to compete in the playoffs, you know, the way they did last year with all the comebacks and, you know, ultimately win it. But I think they'll have the chance to win it for a long time. And if I were a coach who's probably in his last job, you know, I'd love to take 6, 7, or 8 shots at it.
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't somehow yet read the story, SI.com, how Tyrann Mathieu found his way through the chaos on and off the field, you can get through the links on all of Sports Illustrated socials right now, or at Greg Bishop SIs, where you can follow Greg and get the links there. Greg, I appreciate the time tonight and the time on this story. It was a great read and a great conversation, so thank you very much on both accounts.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Greg Bishop of Sports Illustrated. Again, follow him on Twitter at Greg Bishop SI. So much to unpack and all of that. We'll do a little bit of it whenever we come back.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe.
Yeah, one last thing, then I'll listen up the air. Just want to wish a happy birthday to all the dads out there.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Beards said he had a liner that wasn't going to make any sense that I needed to ask about. Is it your dad's birthday, Beards?
It is.
Happy birthday, Mr. McFly. Beards Sr. Does your dad have a beard?
No.
Stunning.
I know.
He has you, though.
That's
so
true.
He doesn't have a beard. He has a beards.
By proxy.
Not by proxy. He has a beards.
That's true.
As a son. Anyway, happy birthday to Beards McFly Sr. Do you need to say anything touching or anything?
No, he's not listening.
Let's put him in good company. Good company. We will have a series of things for you here. I want to talk a little bit about Tyrann Mathieu and that Greg Bishop story here. Thanks again to Greg for giving us that time. But first, I will let you know. Well, will I let you know? We'll see. I'm trying to dig through a number of things here, and what I will tell you for sure is that in about 30 minutes, we're expecting Andy Reid, Pat Mahomes, Sammy Watkins, L'Jarius Sneed as the four guys talking from the Chiefs today. So we're going to bring you all of those live, starting right around 10:30. So you know, get here early, get a good seat. But we're expecting to do that here in about half an hour. Also today, coming up right after us, we'll talk to Darren Smith right at the end of today's show, which will lead you into the ship, which starts at noon. That'll take you to 2, which will take you up to the beginning of today's PGA Championship action, which starts at 2 o'clock here on Sports Radio 810. Plus, at 2, if you'd like to flip over to ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, Spurs Nuggets is over there, and Cubs Cardinals tonight. Actually, I don't think so. I don't think the Cardinals are playing tonight. I think that has changed.
Yes, that game is not happening.
It's not. Someone should tell Jason. Does Jason know that game's not happening?
That is a good point.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll make sure we figure that out. Maybe there'll be some new programming over there. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Also, breaking news from a little bit ago, Hunter Dozier is back. He's been activated off the injured list. He started the season with COVID, has now recovered to the point that he is reactivated. Franchi Cordero has been placed on the IL with a right wrist sprain. But having Dozier back in the lineup will be great. I really enjoy Franchi Cordero's work, or at least I enjoy the prospects of it. So I'd like to believe that he'll be back and hopefully playing well soon. But the Royals have some depth in the outfield, and Dozier can add a little bit of that in right. I'll be really curious to see where he starts playing whenever he does get back into the lineup. I don't believe he's playing today, but I don't think I've seen a lineup yet, so that might still be on the table. We'll keep an eye on that. Also, we're about half an hour away from Chiefs press conferences, and it's still owe you a Tyrann Mathieu discussion. We'll do all that whenever we come back here on Sports Sunday.